unite my hand against your Roman popery.
And they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
We're on a mission from God.
Entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. Maybe we should chug on over to Mamby-Pamby Land, where maybe we can find some self-confidence for you, you jackwagon!
Coming to you live from his padded cell high atop Bethel Church, the most heralded, the most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show Hell Hates. This is Pastor Mike Online.
Coming to you live from our top secret broadcasting bunker here at Area 52. This is the talk show that most popes hate in all the world. This is the Pastor Mike Online. I'm live with you today. And if you heard of the little catastrophe that happened yesterday, I'm not kidding you. I am not kidding you. I have my jacket and tie on. I had my microphone ready to, I had it on, ready to go. Lapel mic. Hit the record button on the camera, and I went to go around the desk to sit in the chair, and I have to use pretty heavy lighting to reflect the background, the green screen, and the light kit just wham, fell. It actually hit the camera, fell over and hit the camera, bounced off the camera and broke. Camera's fine that I know of. It was recording. I have footage of it. You don't see much, but the lighting tower fell over on the camera, bounced off, landed on the floor and snapped. It's a plastic piece that holds this lighting box up there. They sell them on Amazon. They're not too awfully expensive. I think a photographer I know called them soft boxes. It's usually got about six or eight lights in it, LED lights, and it's got a reflective background, and it's like a rectangular box, and it has a little white silky screen over the lights to diffuse the light. Instead of a like a beam of light shining on you, it diffuses the light. And anything to make the green more consistent without having shadows in the background. And so that's why you use the lighting that you do. So I'm going to just order another one. It's not that big a deal. But I'm going, okay, everything yesterday had been stopping me from getting that recorded. Everything Sunday happened to stop me from recording. And I'm going, I'm doing this. So I came in here, suit and tie on, and sat down and did it. Did a few edits in there. You might be able to see it in there. The amount of views that took place just since yesterday afternoon, I think it was like 1,200 already, something like that. Maybe more than that now. Anyway, I worked on more material for that today. And I said in the video, it's called Vatican Secrets Part 1, and the issue in this part is leading up to dealing with the entire issue of the priesthood in Catholicism. And this is why I say that the problem that exists in the Roman Catholic Church is systemic. It is system-wide. They created this monster. They did. God didn't. Babylon or the spirit or just these men that want what all men want, money, power, and women or men or boys. Fornication, I'll say that. They just vested themselves with this great
power, great authority. The money started coming in, which increased their power, which increased their authority, which increased their abilities to get away with things that they have been getting away with now for God only knows how long this has been going on. It's not just some new thing popped up in the 90s. What appeared in the 90s were episodes that dated all the way back to the 70s, 60s, even into the 50s. Children growing up and finally saying, hey, this priest was hitting on me hundreds of times. So, it's going to be a multi-part. Everything I do in this is going to be a multi-part. And just dealing with the priesthood itself, I've got at least three episodes of this one. And there was always a rumor that I had heard, and I found evidence for it today. And it deals with the one of the system-wide problems that this monster called the Vatican has made for itself. Christ died to make men free. And men who have been in bondage and who have been made free, they don't just really want to go back to bondage. Nobody ever wants to, well, I won't say nobody ever wants to go back to prison. Some people do, but most people, most guys don't want to go back to prison. It's bondage. Okay? These Catholic priests entered the seminaries, and whatever lust is in them as a teenager or whatever flowers out in the seminaries. And then its awful fruit comes out in their ministry. And it lasts with them. It lasts with them. I have a picture of a Catholic priest who in the 70s was, late 70s, I think, was molesting boys in his church. And he did do prison time eventually. He left the church, but I'll address this in a minute. You never leave the priesthood. And that's the problem that they have. But anyway, some reporter group caught up with him, and I think it was out in California. And he's an old man now. And he, oh my goodness, he looked like Hugh Hefner. And in his 70s picture, handsome young man. Very tall, with this bright, looked like a bright California boy, all right? Blonde hair, tall, lanky, and probably every girl's dream. It was Ken. It was Barbie's boyfriend, Ken. That's who it was. But anyway, he just, this thing in him was either put in him in the seminary, put in him at a young age, or maybe he was molested by priests, I don't know. But the idea is that once they are ordained as a Catholic priest, that ordination is for life. And it's not with canon law, which is the law that dictates and drives what the Catholic Church does and does not do. Now, who needs laws when you're so powerful that you can just do whatever you want to do? So I didn't say canon law determines what the church can and cannot do. Because with their power, they can do practically anything they want to do. Their power, their influence, the back doors into the Vatican, if you know what that idea means, okay, they're not coming in the front gate to do business, they're coming in the back door. And it's backdoor business. It's business that nobody's, you know, supposed to know about. That probably is why mafia men usually met in the back of these Brooklyn restaurants. They didn't do front door business. They did backdoor business. But that's the Vatican. They have this canon law that dictates what they're supposed to do. But they're so powerful, they can do whatever they want to do. But in canon law, it specifically defines that once a priest is ordained, it's not just a simple matter of, okay, you messed this up and you got caught. You would have been fine as long as nobody would complain, but you got caught and we got to do something with you. And so we're just going to put you out. Okay? We're going to get some guys from Sicily and load your pocket up with cinder blocks and send you out to the sea swimming. And so it's not as easy as that. Canon law says that a priest, once ordained, let me read it. This is from the Catholic Catechism. The Catholic Catechism, which is the book of canon law. It tells you what the church does or what it's supposed to do, what it's not supposed to do, and so on. It tells you what you're supposed to do as a Catholic and what you're not supposed to do as a Catholic. So here's what it says about the Catholic priest in general. And I have this with the title of Is the Priest of the Catholic Church a Replacement for Christ? Because essentially, that's the role that he's playing. Is that he is in the place of Christ. You don't go directly to Christ, you go to the priest. You want salvation? You don't go to Christ to get it. You go to the priest to get it. The priest administers holiness, salvation. The Latin word is sacra. And it's where the word sacrament comes from. And the word sacrament means to be made holy. So if you are a lay person in the Catholic Church, you have the sacraments of penance. You have the sacraments of the Eucharist. You have the sacraments of marriage. The sacrament of extreme unction, which is last rites. And normal things like that. But then there's the sacrament of the what they call the holy orders, which establishes the bishops, the priests, and the deacons, all of which are commanded by canon law to be celibate. All of them. I thought Catholic deacons could be married, and maybe it's possible that if they're already married and called to be a deacon, they can retain their marriage, but I don't know. I'm not clear on that. But let me read this from the Catholic Catechism. And this is actually an older catechism from like the late 1800s, but the ideas have not changed. You know, the Catholic Church doesn't change its mind very often, or hardly at all. So it says, in the ecclesial service of the ordained minister, it is Christ himself who is present to his church as head of the body, shepherd of his flock, high priest of the redemptive sacrifice, teacher of truth. I agree. And every one of those is scriptural. However, then they throw in this thing that is nowhere found in the scriptures. This is what the church means by saying that the priest, by virtue of the sacrament of holy orders. Now, they invented that. Well, no, they didn't invent that. They misappropriated it. That's how I'll put it. They're deacons. There's deacons in our church. I'm a bishop of this church. We all are the priesthood of the believer. It's what the Bible teaches us. But the priest has absconded with all of these powers and taken them on himself. So the priest, by virtue of the sacrament of holy orders, acts in persona Christi Capitis, which is Latin. It means in the person of Christ, the head. In other words, Christ is not here. I am. Deal with it. That's what it means. I am. It would be like if you drove all the way from Washington State and you came down one weekend to visit Bethel Church and you want to be part of the service and, you know, see Area 52 and shake hands with Pastor Mike. You get all the way down here and some guy you don't know says, Pastor Mike's not here this weekend. I'll be filling in for him in his place. So you can just meet me instead. I don't actually have any pastor friends that go. So I'm making it up. And you're going, oh, that's nice. Thank you. So, and I think everybody would agree. There's only one Pastor Mike. Thank God. But that's basically what it says. He acts in persona Christi Capitis, in the person of Christ the head. Jesus is not here. I am. You want anything from Jesus? You got to go through me. You understand? You got to go through me. Now go sit down and do what I tell you to do. And next Sunday, you bring some real cash in here next Sunday. I want to see that bucket full. It comes by your pew. Them guys are going to shake that thing, and they just might pull their jackets back a little bit so you can see that they didn't come alone. And that bucket passes by you. I better see that thing puking out money that you put in there. We better have to go buy some more buckets just for your pew next Sunday if you don't turn out. It's not bad. I think I could be a capo in the mafia. And especially in this issue of the daily mass, the Catholic Church that sits over in your town is not closed Monday through Friday. They're not. They're open, I guess, practically every day of the week. Because every day over there, they're doing a daily mass. I don't have it up here. The book I found in my office Sunday, people send me books from everywhere, and I just look at it for a while, put them on the shelf, and it's a daily missal. M-I-S-S-A-L. It's a mass book. And it has, this one is the St. Joseph Mass. And I don't know what the difference is in them, but it's got a mass for every day of the year. Every single day of the year. 365 masses that a church says in a year's time. At least 365. At least that amount. So it's the daily mass. Back in the early, when I was growing up in St. Louis, they always broadcast, you know, a mass service early in the morning on one of the local stations. You know, St. Louis is a pretty good sized Catholic town. It was settled by the French, so it's Catholic. And, there's a basilica here. It's down by the arch. But anyway, they always had a daily mass on television every morning. I didn't know what that was. I thought, why does their preacher wear a dress? I didn't get that. But anyway, here's does the Bible require a daily mass, again, with the priest standing between you and Christ? And he, and listen, he literally is. Let me put this on the screen. I'll show you what I'm saying, okay? He is literally standing between you and Christ. Look at this picture here. Let me zoom in on this. Here's you down here in your little silk dresses, you little altar boys. Here's Christ up here, and here's the priest. And when he says, in hoc est corpus meum, hocus pocus, he says that he has the ability to turn that wafer into the physical, real presence of the body and blood of Jesus Christ. That if you want Jesus, according to that idea, the priest stands in your way. And get this. The priest has the right, according to canon law, that he doesn't have to give you the Eucharist. He doesn't have to. And let me explain myself in that. It just happened that this happened in St. Louis, so we hear it, you know, we were hearing it on the news as it progressed. Back in the late 1800s, there was a large Polish immigration to St. Louis, and they wanted to build a Catholic church, and so they went to the Archdiocese. The Archdiocese approved this church. And it was under the Archdiocese of St. Louis, but the Archdiocese didn't give them any money to build a church building with it. So these Polish immigrants, hardworking people, went to work, saving their money, and built the thing themselves. And then later on, there was another immigration, 1940, because of Hitler. And so they said, we got to make a bigger one. So they made a bigger one. And again, they did it with their own money and their own sweat, their own hands. Because the Archdiocese, for some reason, apparently you weren't German enough or you weren't French enough in St. Louis. Or Italian. There's a big Italian area, too, in St. Louis. And it's got some wise guys in it. Okay? Don't ask me how I know. But anyway, the Archdiocese never helped them out. So they filed as a corporation in the state of Missouri, a legal entity in the state of Missouri, and they had their own, the property was in their name. They had a board of trustees, a governing board of members of that church. They had a board of trustees, and they had bylaws. And they had their own bank accounts, their own money. They owned their own property. Then, of course, you know, these guys are going nuts. Karol Wojtyła, a priest from Poland, comes over in the late 70s and makes an appearance over there. He's a cardinal, so they think it's a big thing. A couple years later, Karol Wojtyła becomes Pope John Paul II. And in 2000, Pope John Paul II made an appearance, because he's Polish, he makes an appearance at that church, and so, you know, they're world famous. Here we had the Pope himself come to our church. That's a big deal for Catholics. And one of the Pope's right-hand men was the St. Louis Archbishop at that time, Justin Regali. He's Italian. Regali, that's Italian. And he was perfectly fine. And I guess because John Paul II was Polish, he wasn't going to go against him, because generally in the Archdiocese owns the church, and they own the property, and they own, it's all run by the Archdiocese. Every church is organized that way. Well, this was a different case, and Regali wasn't going to do anything about it, even if he wanted to, but he never gave a hint that he wanted to. Regali gets put up a level to the level of Cardinal Archbishop. He's no longer the Cardinal or the Bishop, Archbishop of St. Louis. They get in a guy named Burke was his name. Can't remember his first name. But anyway, Burke comes in, and by that time, we're talking about 2003, 2004, by that time, every archdiocese in the country, and all over the world for that matter, they're looking for cash. Church attendance is going down. They're shutting down churches. They're sending out huge amounts of money, settling all of these priest scandals everywhere. And Burke is like, we need some cash. So he sends word to this Catholic church, this Polish Catholic church, who all these years, the archdiocese wouldn't help them, wouldn't lift a finger, wouldn't give them any money, nothing. They had to make repairs on their building. They had to have tuck pointing done or whatever on the bricks. They'd pay for it themselves. And they had the money in the bank to pay for it themselves. Those people gave well to their church. So anyway, Burke sends a letter over there and says, I'm consolidating all of the churches in St. Louis to be run the same way. So what I want you to do is hand over your building, your bank accounts, everything you got. Hand it over to me. I'm the archbishop. Deal with it. And he wasn't a nice guy. Every time they get him on the news, he just didn't seem like Regali, the guy before him, was more political. I mean, he knew how to present himself on cameras, is what I'll say. But Burke wasn't. He was like, I want the money. And this church wrote back and they said, well, you can't have it. We have bylaws. So the archdiocese sued this Polish Catholic church to force them into dissolving their corporation or dissolving their bylaws so the archdiocese could take over all their bank accounts and their property. Well, they lost. They lost the trial. The Missouri Supreme Court said that this is an issue of religion, that we are not endowed with powers to deal with. So you want separation of powers? Well, you got it. We can't help you out. Okay? You don't want the government telling the church what to do? Fine. We're not going to tell you what to do. So the Supreme Court of Missouri didn't help them out any, didn't help the archdiocese out. And then they said, we're going to take the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, we don't want to get involved in that. So they lost. So then they went the religious route, the canon law route, and said, basically, you're under the archdiocese already. So you either watch this now. And this is where I'm going with this. When I said that if the church doesn't want to give you the Eucharist, they don't have to. Burke sent a letter over there and said, if you don't hand it over, and we're talking, they had $60,000 in the checking account. They had over $13 million in savings. They had property that was worth millions of dollars because of area renovation. It was a blighted area, and the investors were moving in to buy up and scoop up all that property. I don't know what state it was, Missouri, Illinois, but they were going to build a new bridge across the Mississippi River, and the exit ramp would have came off right at that church. So, I mean, that property is worth millions of dollars. And Burke knows this. So he takes the canon law route, and he says, if you don't hand it over, I'm going to pull your priest. I'm going to pull him out of that church. That's my authority. And I'm going to excommunicate everybody in that church, which means that if you don't hand over the money, every one of you are going to go to hell. That's what excommunicado means. It means that you are no longer in favor, not with God. God didn't have anything to do with it. This is not God. This is the church. And that's, I'm not making this up. This is what they did. You type this in. You go to YouTube. The church made like an hour and 15-minute presentation on what had happened. I watched at least an hour of it this morning to remind myself of the facts of it. But basically, what they ended up doing was they excommunicated the board members, the trustees, because they were the ones holding everything up. And they pulled the priest out of that church. Well, that church, they're Polish, right? So who'd they call? They called Chicago. And they talked to the Warshawski brothers up there or whoever. And they got a rogue priest to come down from Chicago and say mass and do all that stuff for them down there in St. Louis. And you can probably just see the Archbishop Burke going... Well, the bottom, I don't know how it ended up. I didn't finish the video and I haven't followed up with it. But essentially, they threatened that church with eternal damnation over what? About $15-20 million in money and real estate. And excommunication, it means that you cannot receive communion. You cannot receive penance. You cannot receive last rites. So essentially, we are banishing you to the devil's flames for all of eternity. Now, this sounds like a mafia shakedown. Because they told the church, now this church now, again, 60 grand in the checking account, 13 mil in savings. Do you think they're looking to borrow money anytime soon? No. So they have the gall to tell this church, well, here's what we'll do for you. Give us all your money. Sign over your real estate. And if your church needs money for, you know, building renovations, upkeep on buildings, paying salaries, whatever, we'll loan it to you. Loan it to you. And that Polish church said, we don't need a loan. We've got, in fact, we'll loan it to you if you need it. We'll make a loan out to you. How's that? I mean, these Poles are not backing down. And it just infuriated that archbishop. These people were treated, how dare they treat him that way? But to tell people over filthy lucre, which means money, to tell people over filthy lucre that they cannot go to heaven because they didn't. I mean, this is the Catholic Church. They've been doing this. They've been playing this game a lot longer than the Polish people were. And they were better at it. And they had more power. They had more attorneys. They had more money. And they had all the time in the world to take over that church. I even had a guy in my church at the time write a letter to the trustees of that Catholic church and say, we're praying for you. And he basically gave them the gospel. He told them, he said, you don't need that Catholic priest, which is what I'm telling people now. You don't need him. bunch of shakedown thieves, bunch of predatory perverts. You don't need those guys. Let me show you a verse of scripture. Let me cave this in a little bit. Hebrews 10, I missed out on this one yesterday. I was a little flustered recording that yesterday, but I was in a hurry because I wanted to get it out. And I was like, I missed it by one verse being done. But this was the last verse that I should have put in there yesterday. And this nails it. Hebrews 10:11. And every priest standeth daily ministering and offering oftentimes the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. How many times did they do it? Daily. How many times a day did they do it? Often. How many of the same sacrifice was it? It was always the same sacrifice. And did it ever take away sins? No. But this man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down at the right hand of God. You know what you don't often see? I won't say you never see it. What you don't often see in a Catholic church is Jesus sitting at the right hand of God. They would rather you see him still suffering on that cross, because that priest, who is the only one in your church, if you're Catholic, he's the only one in your church who has ever made a vow of poverty. You didn't. I mean, you may be in it, but you didn't promise to be that way. He's the only guy that made a vow of poverty. But he's the richest man in the whole church. In fact, really, a lot of this came up in this Polish Catholic Church because the Archbishop, you know, they were used to, they were saying the Mass in Polish. And they were using Polish traditions in the Mass. That's why they went to that church. They were Polish. And they had a Polish priest who knew it and understood it and spoke the language. And so what does the Archbishop do? He pulls the Polish priest out because he knows what he's going to do. And he puts in, the last name was Benet, B-E-N-E. Who's that? It's French. And French don't get along with too many people in this world. Okay? They just don't. And that stopped them having the Mass in Polish. And that cut down on their Polish traditions. And they didn't like it. And while that priest was there, he had been there, I don't know, a few years, and he filed a report with the trustee board saying that the church checking account was almost empty. And when they asked him, why is our checking account empty? He couldn't tell them why. It didn't have any money in it. He didn't account to them. He didn't tell them what he was buying. He didn't say nothing. But he went through thousands of dollars of their cash. Didn't say a word about it until he finally reported, we're almost out of money in the checking account. I thought I'd let you guys know. They didn't like that. So, what does the Bible say? Is it a priest who sacrifices Jesus all over again every day in the form of a wafer with no blood whatsoever? Or is it Jesus Christ who offered one sacrifice for sins forever? And see, that was the problem with the Levite priesthood. They had to offer sacrifices every single day, and it was always the same stuff. It was a lamb, it was an ox, it was a goat, it was fine flour and oil. It was a wave offering, it was a heave offering, it was a sin offering, it was a first fruits offering, it was a tithe, it was the same thing every day. Jesus is so good at atoning for sins, he only had to do it once. Okay, so who would you trust now for the forgiveness of your sins? A man that, if he doesn't like you, or the church tells him he has the power to excommunicate you, you're not going to heaven. Or Jesus, who came to be one of us, to live as us, to understand how we live, understand what it's like to be tempted, understand what it's like to go through the death of loved ones, who understands what it's like to be hungry, who understands what it's like to go without water, who understands what it's like to die and to cross death threshold. He understands it. And he sympathizes with us who are afraid every day that we could be standing at death's door. And he sympathizes with us. And the Bible says he succors us, meaning he blesses us, he refreshes us, gives us spiritual nourishment, physical nourishment. He gives us the things that we need. Why? Because he needed them at one time. He was one of us. They take the priesthood and they say this, we make the priest separate from everybody. We separate them out and make them holy men, holier than thou, allegedly, so that these men could offer the same holy sacrifice that Christ did. That's blasphemy. That's blasphemy. Now, here's what I was getting at a while ago. Can a priest be deprived of his ordination? This is from the Catholic Catechism. This is from the book, page 299. This is, again, another systemic problem of having priests that you can't get rid of. Again, they get charged with going after little kids. And technically, the church just can't say you're not a priest anymore. They just can't do it. Can a priest be deprived of his ordination? No. He can as little be deprived of ordination as of baptism, because it imprints an indelible character upon the soul. A priest, therefore, or a bishop, cannot be deprived of the powers which he has received in his ordination or consecration to change bread and wine into the body and blood of Jesus Christ. In other words, and this has happened, a priest would rape a boy or a girl and then come out and say the Mass. And the church says, there ain't a thing we can do about it. He's a priest forever. And, you know, I've showed you this before, that in the Catholic Mass, if you watch, you just type in Catholic Mass on YouTube or wherever, and you watch how they do it. These altar boys, they bring out the wine, they bring out the a little cruse of water, and right before the priest is going to touch the communion wafer, the Eucharist, he sticks his fingers out, and that boy pours water over the ends of his fingers, and he uses a towel that the boy's got over his arm. He picks the towel up, wipes his fingers off, lays the towel over the boy. They bow to each other. The boy turns around, walks off, and the priest then picks up the Eucharist. Now, supposedly, that water has washed all of his sins away. According to canon law, that water has washed all of his sins away. So now he is worthy to pick up that Eucharist. Even though he just got done performing one of the most heinous acts that a human being can perform. All in the name of God. So that creates another problem for them. The sacrament of holy orders, like that of baptism and of confirmation, confers an indelible or permanent character on the recipient. This means that this sacrament cannot be received again. The indelible character is a reminder to the bishop, priest, or deacon that the vocation and mission he received on the day of his ordination marks him permanently. So, this is why, not too far from where I live, I'd say about 10, 12 miles, I could read the sign. I knew what it was. Out on Highway 30 coming out of Cedar Hill, Missouri. You can look this up on Google. I can't remember the name of the road, but once Highway 30 turns into a two-lane, and you're going west toward Interstate 44, there was a little road that turned off to the right, right next to a little Baptist church. And they had a sign there in Italian that said, Il Ritiro, R-I-T-I-R-O. And I knew that was Italian. And I could tell that it was the word retire. So I put two and two together, came up with four, took away two. Now I'm back to two, and I figured out that it was a retirement place for Catholic priests. Because who else writes in Italian in Jefferson County, Missouri? Okay? But anyway, I may have heard a guy say this, but it just hit me one day. I bet they got priests out there hiding out. Because you would, if you didn't know Italian, you probably wouldn't know what that was. If you'd never been down that road, you wouldn't know where it was. But the only reason why I knew where it was when I was working as a house painter, we got sent to work on a house out there, and we had to pass that to get to this house. Windy, you know, county road going through all these hills and valleys, and we're at the northeast edge of the Ozarks. So we're, you know, going like this and around this and so on, and off in this little patch of woods in a hollow is this retirement center for Catholic priests. And I have it on good authority that there's at least six out there that are registered. Registered. Okay? At least six. And the registry's public. It's not private information I'm getting. But at least six are registered offenders in that place. And one of the local news stations recently did a news story on it. That's what I was looking for. And I guess I got sidetracked and I didn't see it. Now here's the third part of their systemic priesthood problem. And I'm just kind of giving you the easy version of what's going to come out. And I know for a fact I'll be adding a lot more to this. I found a book. If you want to read a book on this, let's see here. Here we go. Let me put this up on the screen here for you. Let me do this again. Where are you? Here we go. This book is called, let me see if I can do this, The Mysteries of the Neapolitan Cloister. Now that has nothing to do with ice cream. In Napoli, it's talking about Napoli, Italy. That's what Neapolitan is. Napoli. It was written in 18. This is, you go to books.google.com and then type in Mysteries of the Neapolitan. Let me show you how to get to it. Because if you don't know what to push, you'll end up having to buy this book. Okay? So, let me go back here. All right. So, you type in Mysteries of the Neapolitan Convents. And see, these are all republications, reprint of the originals. So, on any view, click Full View, which means the copyright has expired. The original copyright of this particular book has expired, and Google scanned it out of some university library or some seminary library. And this is the original version, Mysteries of the Neapolitan Cloister. And you just click it, and you'll get a PDF of it, and you can download that PDF. Or you can download it as an EPUB for your Kindle reader or whatever book reader you have. Okay? This was written by a woman who was, I think at one time, going to join the convent. Or did. Ex-Benedictine nun. So she was in there. And she basically spills the beans on these priests and these nuns that were all like hitting on each other, flirting with one another, having affairs with one another. And then, let's see if I can find out where I should have left it where I was reading today. Because she spoke of a nun who, and this is where I'm getting to in this part of the thing. Do we need priests or not? Anyway, the book is called Mysteries of the Neapolitan Convents. You look that up, download it for free. Because I'll be using some source material from that. Charles Chiniquy wrote this book, The Priest, the Woman, and the Confessional. And some people say, it's controversial and blah, blah, blah. But the other people who write these other books back it up. And with what we know now is going on, backs it up. Chiniquy wrote in the mid to late 1800s, mid-1800s, same time this Italian book was written, that the confessional generally is where these priests used to groom these women, these young girls. Back in the 1800s, it was primarily girls and women, married or unmarried, and nuns. Now it's boys. But anyway, she said that this one nun pretended to be sick one day because she was having an affair with the priest and she wanted him over there. So she begged the Mother Superior, send Father so-and-so to me, for I am in great need of his aid and so on. And so he gets to go in a cloister convent, which means closed off, and go into the private bedroom of this nun, shut the door, because it's nobody else's business what he's doing in there. And besides that, half of the nuns know what's going on in there. And then he comes out a few hours later, and what do you know? She came down with a sickness that a physician, well paid, referred to as dropsy, and they sent her away somewhere to be healed of that. You know what that is, don't you? Yeah. Well, that's what she says in there. How many times does that happen? So I wrote on here, who commands priests to be celibate? Now, here's the Catholic Catechism. All candidates for ordination are chosen from among those who intend to remain celibate for the sake of the kingdom of heaven, and they quote Matthew 19:12. Their celibacy is a sign of their intention to imitate Christ's own celibacy and to serve God in the church's ministry with an undivided heart. That's the Catholic Catechism for adults. Now, Matthew 19:12 doesn't mention anything about celibacy. It mentions eunuchs. And that's a different thing entirely. Celibacy requires the absolute control over the will and the impulses of the flesh of mankind. And mankind has no control over the impulses of his flesh. He has no control over it. If he did, if we did, we wouldn't need a Savior. So Christ says, for there are some eunuchs. See, eunuchs doesn't require, to be a eunuch, it doesn't require a strict control over your impulses. It just requires a very painful surgery. Okay? It's castration. Because they would put eunuchs in charge of the king's stable of women. And to ensure that the men who were there to guard and protect the king's women didn't themselves get involved with the king's women, they made them eunuchs. Generally from birth, from a young age. And these men grew up never having the desire for a woman. Never. I heard the story of a man. This was on a TV news story years ago about a man who had, he had messed with children, and he wanted to be free from that. He wanted that to go away. And he begged his doctor to castrate him. His doctor refused, and so the man sued for the right. And all they would do is give him a chemical castration, which they give you it's a hormone or something like that, and it dulls the hormones that drive that. Without the hormones, you don't have those impulses. And I don't know how his story ever ended up. I'm sure he could probably go to India and get it done for $100. Okay. But yeah, that's what he wanted. Because he didn't want to do this anymore. He knew it was wrong. He knew better than most priests do. The priests justify it. Threaten anybody who goes against it. Cover their own buddies up who are doing it because they're doing it. Now, Jesus said, there are some eunuchs which were so born from their mother's womb, and there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men. And there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it. And again, eunuchs, 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 not celibacy. That's two different things. Two different things. And to my knowledge, the church never requires, the Catholic Church never requires, nor does it encourage any of its priests to become eunuchs. Now, let's stop and think about this rationally. Okay? So let's say that you're Pope Francis. Now, 30 years ago, as a priest, you never thought you would be Pope Francis. So, 30 years ago, as a priest, you probably weren't the model citizen of the community. Now, I don't know anything on Jorge Bergoglio from Argentina. I know nothing about him other than he's a Jesuit. Okay? Which, that's bad enough. I don't know if he's done anything. I don't know if he's ever violated his oath of celibacy. I don't know anything about him. But you got to know, 30 years ago, he never thought anything about being Pope. Okay? So, what I'm saying is, there is no doubt in my mind that if we go back to John the 23rd, that was in the 60s, and Pope Paul, John Paul I, John Paul II, Ratzinger, who was Pope Benedict, and Pope Francis, you got to know that at least one of those popes dillied and dallied before they became pope. I mean, you got to know it. And probably even it could be after they became pope. I don't know. But even at the top level of the papacy, they're not willing to address. They ask, you know, these reporters go to the Vatican, they get a representative to come out and ask them, are you guys ever considering easing the demands of celibacy? And they say, no, we're not even thinking about it. We're not even talking about it. Because this is a gift that God gives these men. Really? Ask the priest if they think it's a gift. Ask them. When they're laying in bed at night, alone. And I tell you, the ministry gets lonely enough. Alone, without a wife, without God's plan, and they're breaking their vows, and they know it. And they can't stop. So, what does God say? Now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. God has a plan to make what we do as humans holy. It's called marriage. Let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Oh, it looks like that verse is not all-inclusive. I'm sorry. I didn't write the Bible. I just believe it. But that's God's plan for man and woman's impulses. There's a holy way to react and an unholy way to react. And celibacy is not the answer. It's not. Now, every so often, you find a man or you find a woman who do not need. Paul was a man who never needed to be married for whatever reason. God blessed him. But Peter had a wife. And why do you think Peter had a wife? Okay? Did he just need somebody to cook for him or what? Did he needed a wife, and it was the only way God makes it right. The bishop is to be the husband of one wife, 1 Timothy 3. Titus 1, the bishop is to be the husband of one wife, and he's to have good children, faithful children. In 1 Timothy, he says the husband of one wife and having his children in subjection. Well, guess what? There's at least, by one estimation, 10,000 people on this planet right now that are current children of Roman Catholic priests who have denied them their childhood and denied them their last name. This one lady, she looked, found her birth certificate. It didn't even have a last name on her birth certificate. Because the priest, who was her dad, refused to step up to the plate and say, she's my daughter. Now, is that Christ's love that does that? Is that Christ's love that teaches that man that in order to remain a faithful and separated priest, he must deny the existence of his own flesh and blood child? Is that God's love? No. In fact, it's the opposite of it. Suffer the little children to come unto me and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. Now, I'm not going to talk about that guy right now. I'm going to end with this. The problem of a never-ending priesthood. In other words, just like I explained a while ago, they say once a priest, always. The only thing you don't have the power to do is forgive sins for some reason. But you can still say Mass and you can still turn the Eucharist into the body and real presence of Jesus Christ. You can still, I don't remember what all they said you can do. You just can't be in the, for some reason, you can't give penance out. You can't hear confessions. So that's a problem of a never-ending priesthood and the command of celibacy. So here's the systemic problems that they've created for themselves. Number one, priests heavily involved with alcohol and pornography. That's bare minimum. That's the bottom line right there. And I would say that there's very little chance that if you ever met a Catholic priest, that he hasn't at least gone that far. My wife is there for me. And I have started using her in that way. And I don't mean like how you think I mean it. I mean when I am down low, I'll call for her. And we'll just hold each other and talk for a while. And spend time together. And I'm telling you, that helps me. You know, the older I get, the romance is when we still love each other more than we ever did. Need each other more now than we ever have. But it's not the romance side of it. Okay? It's the true love side. She's there for me. So I don't need alcohol. Okay? I don't need another woman either. I've got everything I need that God packaged up for me. Then you have priests breaking celibacy by fornication with married or unmarried people. Then you have priests who have fathered children with nuns or the laity. Here's a current article. I'm about out of time, but this former nun allegedly abused by a CDF official which is the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith, which is what Ratzinger was overseeing, which used to be what did they call it back in the Dark Ages when the Catholics strung you up by your thumbs, and anyway, that's what it used to be. She reported a priest for making unwanted advances toward her. She's published a new book called Chronicling Her Spiritual Abuse in Catholic Religious Orders. Wagner, whose denunciations led Father Herman Geisler to resign his CDF post in January, gives a detailed account of the various forms of sexual and spiritual abuse she experienced during her 8 years as a member of the spiritual family, The Work, the same mixed religious community to which Father Geisler belongs. In her latest book, Spiritueller Missbrauch in der Katholische Kirche, pardon my German, Spiritual Abuse in the Catholic Church, she goes into the different facets of the phenomenon of spiritual abuse. This is a former nun, a former German nun. Here is, and of course, the priest doesn't admit to it. He doesn't own up to it. Then you have the case of a group of nuns from a convent in India, on behalf of one of their sisters, who claimed she had been raped 13 times or more by the bishop, Bishop Franco Mulakal of Jalandhar, India, which is in Punjab state. And the article says that this particular area of India has the highest Catholic population of anywhere in India. It's like over 25% of the people there are Catholic. And I don't know how their courts do. I don't know if they have a jury trial or if it's all heard by judges. But imagine, remember, how much power does the Catholic Church have? I mean, they literally made the prison sentence and the crimes of Archbishop George Pell, who was the Archbishop over Australia, who was sent to prison by a judge. You ought to watch this judge read his sentencing report. He details everything that George Pell did to these boys. And then it went to, it got appealed. And the appellate court, 2-1, said he did it. And then, guess what? It goes to the Supreme Court of Australia. 9-0, they said, he didn't do anything wrong. He gets out of prison. Gets sent back to the Vatican. They made that go away. Priests who have fathered children with nuns or the laity. Priests who are led into sodomy by seminarians. In some cases, that's where it starts. Priests and nuns who become predators on the young. This is the problem of a never-ending priesthood and the absolute demand of celibacy upon priests and nuns in the Catholic Church. This is the monster that they've created for themselves. When you put so many laws of bondage on man. There are laws, listen to this, this is Christian. Christ's laws make men free. Man's laws put men in bondage. Which would you rather have? Because I can tell you that every single difference between the Catholic Church and Bethel Church here in Festus, Missouri, every single difference between us exists when they stepped outside of God's Word in the Bible and made up rules, canons, and dogmas for themselves. That's where their monster is that they created. And now they're having to deal with it. And they don't want to. So it's just making the problem worse and worse. They're trying to cover it all up, make it go away, cover one another's sins up, because they're all, 90% of them are guilty of it. And they're like, you know, one priest is getting caught and he goes to his bishop and says, what are you going to do about it? Bishop says, well, I'll turn you in. Priest says, well, you're going with me because I know yours and you know mine. So why don't you just send me over here about 30 miles south of here? I've been wanting to go down there anyway. You bring somebody else in here. We won't tell the people where I'm going to, what's going on. They won't know anything. And we'll just make this go away. And then you get family members and you get money involved in it. And you have one of the most corrupt religious machines that the world has ever known. And Exodus 16 says a proverb about her. As the mother is, so are the daughters. And practically every Christian cult in and outside of America follows almost that same path. An all-powerful presbytery that tells you everything you must do and must not do, and don't bother with reading the Bible because you won't understand it. You must get it from us. That's Jehovah's Witness. That's Mormons. That's the Catholics. It's all the same. And then come tell us all your sins and then turn in all your money. Listen to the confession of Sister Charlotte. Type that in on YouTube. You may not be able to find it. It's hard to find anymore. But she broke the news on these convents, and she said, you know, the motivation for a lot of these convents going after these young girls and pulling them in, especially of certain families, is because when a girl decides to join a convent, any inheritance she would have received from her parents' death goes to the convent. What a scam! What a scam that is! Anyway, good to be with you today. Thank you for your prayers for me. Continue them. As I continue to work on this series, I would say I'm going to record part two. I'm not done putting it together yet. I got notes to work on. So, thank you for your prayers. Joe Appreciato. By the way, COVID is creeping its way slowly through people in our church again. So, if you live here locally, your attendance is not mandatory. In fact, we're probably just going to go ahead and cancel our Christmas party we have every year, and because there's so much sickness going around. And we'll probably have a near empty space tomorrow night, near empty Sunday, which is fine. We need to put a stop to it going around. I don't want to repeat of 2020 ever again. So, hey, I love you. God bless you. We'll see you. That's my calling.